Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 18. I'm Rob Wright, editor of searchsecurity.com, and I'm here as usual with my site editor, Peter Loschen. Peter.
Hi, Rob.
Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Peter, we're talking about a topic that I actually had hoped to get to in our previous episode, but it's probably a good thing because we went about 40 minutes in that episode, and we did not have time or energy to get to my topic this week. Something that's very near and dear to me is discussing the folly of the federal government as it when it comes to technology and specifically cybersecurity. And really nothing embodies that more than the OPM breach and now the OPM report from the House Oversight Committee, which is to say that this report is damning is probably an understatement. There's definitely some issues with the report, the way it's written, some of the things that they say and suggest. But I think it drives home the point that that this agency, the Office of Personnel Management, it was just a complete mess in terms of its cybersecurity posture and the way that they handled the intrusions, the breaches, plural, was not good. And that's probably putting it politely, far too politely.
Well, okay. I'm gonna start out my response by just pointing out that it's pretty much the OPM report that we're talking about is the report published by the people who are in Congress, who are politicians. So it's very politicized, and they are, it did come out from a Republican-controlled committee. And under, the signature of the Republican chiefs of that committee. And, it's a very interesting report. It is. And when I looked at the format that they used, it looks very entertaining. They've got that initial page that has
the preamble.
Even before the preamble, I think.
The pre-preamble.
They right. have some bullet points from different they
quote a lot of
different yeah they quote different people, like you're looking at a paperback, and I look forward to sitting down under an umbrella and reading this report, but I'm not going to take anything in it as gospel because
true
it is political, so yes, it's bad, but we haven't heard the other side. And this is also, it happened 3 years ago when we were not as smart as we are now.
True. So. You are always here to sort of temper my reactionary opinions and freakouts, and I appreciate that.
So, well, no. save your thanks, because maybe by the end of the podcast you'll change your mind, because I've got a couple of things.
We got hot takes.
Well, I've got a couple of in our lightning round.
All right. Okay. Let's take a closer look at the report. And again, this is the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. They commissioned a report. It's over 200 pages, more than I guess if I'm being
241, I think.
Is it really?
I believe
so.
Oh,
yeah. Wow. And this is in relation to the recent OPM breach where, as I'm sure most readers probably know, millions of documents regarding federal government personnel, past and present, were stolen. They were exposed and they were stolen. And a lot of personal information about people that have worked for the government, do work for the government, fingerprint data for about 5.6 million people, security clearance, background investigation information. I mean, really detailed stuff, not just about the individuals that work for the government, but friends, family, associates, coworkers. There's a lot of information in there.
And it's worse than that, if you can believe it. Because
okay, go on.
Someone who's gone through the vetting process to get clearance, they make it very clear. They don't want you to lie when you submit your application, and they have questions in there about everything: who you like, what you do, what you've done in the past, what might come back to bite you in the hindquarters.
Right.
So, in other words, everything that an attacker who would want to subvert an employee of the United States government, anything in that attacker would want to know to turn you as an agent is in those files.
Yeah.
So, you know, people who mental health issues, treatments, you know, anything.
Yeah. I'm a movie fan. I don't know if you know that, Peter. You've picked up on
it? I think I picked up on it. I'm not that slow.
All right. Well, the way I described it to some folks in you know, outside of my job, outside of the industry, who don't know a lot about what's going on with the federal government and the OPM. They've maybe heard peripherally, you know, about the OPM breach, but they don't know the details. The way I described it to them, I said it's like the movie The Usual Suspects, when the main characters, the criminals, the robbers, or they're all sitting around a pool table, and a guy walks in, Kobayashi, representing the villain, Kaiser Sose, and he comes in and he drops folders on all in front of all of them, and it's got everything that they've ever done, every relative, every friend, every criminal associate, everyone that they've ever done time with in prison, everything, their whole lives. He just drops it right in front of them, and that's basically what the hackers behind the OPM breach got with this information, and it's pretty devastating. And you mentioned the quotes at the beginning of the report. I guess we should read some of these. I really want to do a dramatic reading, and if I could do like a Morgan Freeman voice, I think that would be great. But you know, I guess non-dramatic reading of this information. Let's try that. So this report starts out the first couple pages. There's quotes, like you said. It's almost like a dust jacket. Like, you know, the OPM breach was the worst thing ever. You know, by so and so.
Well, let's just go to it.
Yeah. I'll read a couple. I don't know. Do you have it in front of you?
I do have it.
Do you want to read? You want to read
got
a couple?
It right here.
All right. Can I do one?
Sure.
I'll do one, and then you do one. I think I know which one you might pick. I'm just going to go with the first one. This is Joel Brenner, former NSA senior counsel. Quote, "This is the crown jewels material, a gold mine for foreign intelligence service. This is not the end of American human intelligence, but it's a significant blow." I mean, I think that may, end quote, I think that may be overstating, you know, the end of American human intelligence. I think that may be overstating things a little bit. But it goes to your point, Peter, about sort of the politicizing of this report and maybe some of the look, I'm as alarmist about this stuff as anybody I know, but there are some points in here, some language that seems a little bit over the top. But you go. You pick a quote.
Okay.
You give me one of the dust jacket quotes.
Okay. I'll go with the next with a short one. The SF 86, which is the form that you have to fill out,
yep,
that was compromised. The SF 86 gives you any kind of information that might be a threat to the employee's security clearance. That's Jeff Neal, a former DHS official.
It's true.
As I was.
And you know, to go a step further, even more detailed, a quote from James Comey, director of the FBI, who we've discussed many times here.
Yes, yes.
Quote, "My SF-86 lists every place I've ever lived since I was 18, every foreign travel I've ever taken, all of my family, their addresses. So it's not just my identity that's affected. I've got siblings, I've got 5 kids, all of that is in there," end quote.
Okay. Right. The reason I chose not to pick that
one
is that what else is in the SF-86 is whether or not James Comey ever inhaled, whether it's ever been to a mental health professional,
yep,
whether he's ever had cancer or any other serious illnesses.
Yeah, debilitating, you know, serious diseases.
Whether he's, I mean, they get very personal in there. They ask about your orientation.
Sexual orientation. Exactly. I mean, I know people that have filled these forms out, and I've been one of the people that gets called by DHS and mm-hmm. other agencies saying, what do you know about this person? You know, give us the dirt. I mean, they don't say give us the dirt, but it's what they are after. They want to know if this person is going to work for an agency that deals with, you know, law enforcement or, you know, intelligence, that they want to know these things. And rightfully so. So, yeah, I mean, it's there could be potentially embarrassing stuff in there, which, you know, can you imagine? I mean, by all accounts, according to this report and to most experts, it seems like everyone is sort of in agreement that the forces that perpetrated these breaches, these hacks, were affiliated with the Chinese government.
Correct.
And that's probably a good thing, because can you imagine with what's going on with the DNC and Hillary's emails, if the Russians got this, like, this dirt, we would be writing stories. Like, there would be just one, it wouldn't just be Colin Powell and Hillary Clinton. Like, we would be getting things one after another, just dominoes falling about all the embarrassing details. It would make the Sony hack look like, I don't even know. Like, it looked like a children's book. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, not just what you've done, but also, has he ever been arrested?
Oh, yeah,
has
yeah.
Has he ever been convicted of anything?
Yep. Arrest, I mean, records, yep. Yep.
Everything.
Criminal, yeah.
Everything.
If I remember this correctly, it's not even stuff that you've been arrested for. If you've ever been a person of interest or known anybody or been affiliated with anybody that's been involved in a criminal investigation, like that, this, so like if you're let's say you're out of law enforcement now, you're out of the FBI, you're out of DHS, you're out of the intelligence community, but you have connections to somebody that was investigator or was convicted of a crime. I mean, all that's in there. There's so many different ways that you could come at a person with this stuff and potentially smear them and ruin them. That's why, I mean, I brought up the Russian, you know, DNC angle, because this would just be absolutely devastating. So, but yeah, let's get into the meat of the report, because the House report starts out by saying, you know, the government of the United States has never been more vulnerable to cyber attacks. No agency is safe. I don't know if I would agree with that, more vulnerable to cyber attacks. I mean, there was probably a period prior to, you know, the last maybe 10 years even, when we probably were more vulnerable to an attack, but there weren't as many people capable of or looking to attack the government. I think we're living in an era now where it's a lot different, don't you think?
Well, okay, so that's the kind of thing that I class under political hyperbole.
Yeah,
but and in a way it's undeniably true, because we've never been more vulnerable to cyber attack because we've never had so much cyber stuff.
Right, that's true.
I mean, everything is online, is on computer. I shouldn't say online, but everything is on computers now.
Yeah.
And if you can get to the computers where all the stuff is, then you're vulnerable. If your stuff was sitting in those gray filing cabinets in a, you know, in a dull, windowless government office in Washington, they might be vulnerable to other kinds of attacks, but they're not going to be vulnerable to cyber attack.
Yeah.
So, okay, I mean, it's a matter of words.
Yeah, exactly.
More so than, you know, anything else. But yes, this was a really bad attack, and it does show that 3 years ago the state of the art for the government was not in such a great state. So in some ways it's a good thing. I mean, positive things are coming from it, because we've exposed the problem. It's unfortunate. It's not a good thing overall in balance.
But no, and we'll talk about some of the I guess the positives or the rebuttals from OPM too.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get into the real nitty-gritty, the heart of the matter, and that is how this whole thing started, which they go into gory detail, like real gory detail in the report about it. And I'll just read some of the excerpts here about what actually happened, what led to this whole mess. So I'm reading from the report here, quote, "The lax state of OPM's information security left the agency's information system exposed for any experienced hacker to infiltrate and compromise. On March 20th, 2014, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's United States Computer Emergency Response Team, U.S. CERT, notified OPM's Computer Incident Response Team that a third party had reported a data exfiltration from the OPM's network." So let's stop right there. So it wasn't even DHS that discovered the data exfiltration. It was an unnamed third party that reported. So the OPM didn't know it. DHS didn't know it. The US CERT team didn't know it. The vendors that work for OPM didn't know it. It was an unnamed third party that had reported the data exfiltration. Quote, "In an effort to better understand the threat posed by the hacker, OPM monitored the adversary's movements over a two-month period." This is in bold now. "The agency's senior leadership failed to fully comprehend the extent of the compromise, allowing the hackers to remove manuals and other sensitive materials that essentially provided a roadmap to the OPM IT environment and key users for potential compromise." That's pretty bad. So right off, you miss the intrusion and you make the decision to not to stop it right away, but to just monitor it.
Okay. In retrospect, that was the wrong choice. In hindsight, as we all know, is always 20/20.
True.
If they'd made that decision and then monitored and actually got value from that monitoring, it would have been the right decision. But, you know, again, this
sure,
is just,
sure.
I'm just
I mean,
pointing.
Yeah,
the
yeah. So
the politics here are such that
no, you know, and there are there have been incidents, and other security vendors, other organizations will tell you that, you know, cutting off the intruder right away may not always be the best course of action.
Well, you want to know how deep.
You want to know where they're going, what they're trying to get at, if you can trace it. No, all fair points. However, the fact that they didn't know that this was going on and they knew that there was sensitive material that like if the stakes are, if you misidentify the threat, if you don't correctly assess how bad this breach is and how experienced these hackers are, and you just let them sit there while you think that you have them under control, but you're actually exposing, you know, SF-86 forms and all this important personal information, that's really bad. Like, I'm not sure that was the right move when you're talking about real important personal data. Regardless, you know, bad decision in retrospect on their part. And this is the next part of the report. Quote, "While the OPM monitored the first hacker," this is my favorite part of the whole report. Quote, "While the OPM monitored the first hacker, for convenience here, we will refer to this actor as Hacker X1. I love that. Sounds like a supervillain. On May 7th, 2014, another hacker posed as an employee of an OPM contractor performing background investigations. The contractor is Keypoint, and they conduct, like it says in the report, is they conduct the background investigations. We can call this Hacker X2. Hacker X2 used the contractor's OPM credentials to log into the OPM system, install malware, and create a backdoor to the network. Credentials, third-party credentials. Peter, how often do we say this, that, you know, if you allow third-party contractors or partners access to your network with credentials, you need to vet them. You need to monitor them. I mean, how many times does this need to happen to people?
That's a rhetorical question.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, no, and I think of the standard response, which is you're only as strong as your weakest link and all the rest of it. But it's true. It's very true. And we're in a generation where we're making this transition from living in a real world where there's limitations to what can happen.
Right.
And we're moving into the, you know, for lack of a better term, the cyber world.
Yeah.
Where things are different, and we have to learn how to live there, and it's gonna take a while.
Yeah.
But
I will say this though. So this went on in 2014. When was the Target breach? 2013.
That sounds about right.
I mean, I guess we didn't know everything that we know now about the Target breach at the time, but I feel like we probably knew within a year that there was something going on with a third party contractor that, you know, was breached, and then the hackers used those credentials to get into Target. I mean, I guess I'd have to go back and look at the dates, but I feel like this is a pretty important lesson that, you know, I guess most government agencies should know now. I guess you could debate whether or not this was something that they should have been monitoring more closely back then. Regardless, I'll continue with the report.
I just want to add to make the further point in defense of the government and OPM.
Yes.
There's a lot of things that are going on that would be nice to be able to do, but there's not always the money, especially in government, because you gotta every year you're up there and trying to get that budget increased. That is a fair point.
But if you, I mean, I think in a couple of portions of the report they get into, you know, just what the, or you know, what the agency, what OPM had done in response to the attack and prior to the attack, what type of investments they've made. I'm saying that if you can't get basic security measures in place to monitor credentials and do proper identity and access management, then you have no business handling that kind of information. The FS-86 forms, personal data of every federal employee, you have no business. I mean, end of story. If you can't do basic things like that, you should not be allowed to have this data. The data is out there. These documents are out there. They're not protected. They're not encrypted. I think Mike was right. I mean, I think Mike at one point said, Michael Heller, our senior reporter, in discussions about this, that this report didn't actually mention the word encryption once. It doesn't seem like.
Well,
or he guessed because we couldn't really search it because
the form,
PDFs.
Yeah, the format, it looks like it's a scanned document rather than an actual PDF where you can search on things. So it's 241 pages, and you'd have to spend a lot of time very carefully reading to find out if they said anything about encryption.
I'm pretty sure they didn't, but the point. I guess the point stands. The lack of preparation that apparently the people that worked at this organization were not aware of the fact that they were sitting on a gold mine, like the dust jacket quotes that we read. Mm. How important this stuff was. So I'll continue reading the report here. Quote. As the agency monitored Hacker X1's movements through the network, it noticed Hacker X1 was getting dangerously close to the security clearance background information. OPM, in conjunction with DHS, developed a plan to kick Hacker X1 out of the system. It termed this remediation, quote-unquote, the Big Bang. I love that. That's great. The agency was confident the planned remediation effort in late May 2014 eliminated Hacker X1's foothold on their system. But Hacker X2, who had successfully established a foothold on OPM system and had not been detected due to gaps in OPM's IT security posture, remained in OPM's system post-Big Bang. So, end quote. To recap, they detect a hacker. No, I take that back. Someone else detects a hacker, not affiliated with DHS, not affiliated with US CERT. This person tells US CERT and DHS. DHS and US CERT tell OPM. They discover the hacker. They monitor the hacker. They track the hacker. They know that the hacker's getting close to this data. They come up with a plan. But in all this time that they're doing this, these supposed bright minds within the government, they don't notice Hacker X2. And I'll continue. So this is from the report again. Quote, the exfiltration of the security clearance files could have been prevented. That's in bold. After the May 27th Big Bang, HackerX2 moved around OPM systems until they began exfiltrating data in July 2014, as OPM's Director of IT Security Operations, Jeff Wagner, explained. The Keypoint credentials were used for the initial attack vector, and then the attacker used various tactics to obtain domain administrator credentials to ultimately perform operations and maintain persistence from malware. Beginning in July through August 2014, the hacker X2 exfiltrated security clearance background investigation files. Then in December 2014, personnel records were exfiltrated, and in early 2015, fingerprint data was exfiltrated. So timeline, March 2014 is when DHS and US CERT tell OPM that something's going on. And then, you know, now it's early 2015, it's almost a year later, and they don't know that this is going on. Like, you would think that they would double their efforts to make sure that there weren't other hackers or other intrusions or other potential breaches. But apparently that wasn't the case. You're apoplectic. You don't know what to say.
I don't know what to say.
So they exfiltrate all this data. And, you know I mentioned, you know, Russia before. And, you know, it's a good thing that, like, you know, it wasn't them, because they would have spread this information everywhere and embarrassed folks. But I will say this, these hackers, there's some bravado here. It's apparently in April of 2014, so not long after HackerX1 was detected, someone registered the website opmsecurity.org, registered it under the name Steve Rogers, who's Captain America. And the hackers apparently used this domain later on, HackerX2, to exfiltrate the data. So literally they set up, like, in plain sight, they set up a website mocking OPM and exfiltrated the data. Clearance, brazen, these hackers. And we couldn't stop them. Like, I mean, that's pretty embarrassing. I don't know. I know that there are people that probably, I mean, there are people that did lose their jobs over this, but that's just embarrassing. Sorry.
At the same, well.
Am I losing it?
No, not at all. But at the same time, you got to remember, I mean, we're not talking about script kiddies or, you know, the crackers with attitude or, you know, any number of these guys.
The crackers.
We're talking about advanced.
True.
You know, an APT.
True. But. I mean, it's an APT, but let's be honest. I mean, and now this has come out a couple of times in recent months, but I think just recently there was somebody from the NSA speaking at an event, Curtis Dukes, deputy manager of security systems within the NSA, who said that, you know, none of the zero-day exploits that were, you know. All of these big hacks that have happened with the government were not a result of, you know, zero days or any of the cyber exploits or cyber weapons, you know, from things like Equation Group. It was just, they were really, these agencies, these government, you know, departments were really that bad at security. It did not take much for them to be breached.
So. Okay. Even without the zero days, though, if you've got a cyber core, or, you know, whatever, however you're going to term your force, if all they do all day is figure out how to get into systems that they're not supposed to get into, they're going to get pretty good at it. And
yeah,
and I think, from my understanding, generally when I talk to people who know about this stuff, it seems like the first place they go to is the cabinet with the screwdriver, instead of the, you know, the vault with the zero days in it.
Right.
You go for the low hanging fruit first. So I'm not trying to be an apologist for the OPM or the government or anything else like that. But it's, yeah, it's bad. And if you take a partisan report as the gospel, then
sure,
yeah, you know, that's probably not the, you know, I'm not going to get too worked up over it, because yeah, people make mistakes, and even in the government, especially in the government, and it's not a pretty sight to watch some of the stuff that goes on, because you're very limited, you know, you can't, if you're an OPM, you can't do anything to raise revenue other than get more budget. And if the Senate and the House say you're not getting more budget this year, you're getting less.
Right.
You're kind of stuck. You can't do a bake sale or a cookie sale.
Yeah. There's definitely, you know, a quagmire there, because this stuff needs to be addressed, but no one seems to have the political will to. Well, let's talk about that. That's a great sort of transition to other news of the week. The first federal CISO, chief information security officer, retired Brigadier General Greg Tuhill, was appointed. And his background, I mean, Peter, you wrote about it, but his background is pretty. I mean, he seems like he has the credentials to, you know, serve effectively as a CISO. He's got a pretty strong background in this. In this area, but I mean, why would you want this job? I mean, I guess, like, so he's going to be tasked with making sure things like OPM do not happen. I mean, in the simplest terms, the federal CISO is going to be tasked with preventing things like FDIC and OPM breaches from happening again. And like, what is your confidence level that the OPM thing is the last that we've seen of this, that we're not going to see any more like this level of severity of data exposed, sensitive data exposed, and inadequacy of cybersecurity?
Well, there's no question that the OPM breach was a catastrophe.
Yes,
I mean. Totally.
A cyber catastrophe.
A cyber catastrophe. Even better. A cyber catastrophe. Will it never happen again? I don't think anybody can promise that. As far as General Tuhill, why would he take the job? He's retired. He probably, you know, I mean, I'm being glib here, but
glib.
I mean, who better to take a job as the first one? We over the water cooler, we've had a lot of conversations about, you know, what are they going to do, and, you know, what can he do, and is he going to be able to do anything?
Right.
As far as that goes, it's perfect to get a guy who's at the end, whose career is actually even over, and then comes back.
Retired. It's great. Comes back. I mean, he's worked at DHS. I mean, he. I hope that. I can't imagine someone taking this job without some assurances that, listen, I've got to be given a little bit of time here to actually make things happen. So, like, if a breach happens 6 months from now, I don't want to have to resign in shame because there was another OPM. And I likened it on Slack. We were discussing this on Slack. To somebody coming in, a manager, a baseball manager, a decorated manager, coming in to take over a last place team and getting some sort of promise or handshake agreement to, listen, you got to give me more than just a couple years. If we finish in last place the next 2 years, don't fire me. Give me at least, you know, 3 or 4. Give me a chance to actually get some stuff done, clean up the mess. It's gonna be a while. And I mean, Peter, it's gonna be a while before this stuff is taken care of. Despite what the OPM says now, I mean, the acting director of OPM published something, a statement on their site, sort of, you know, a response to the House Oversight Committee's report. And, you know, it's like, it's got some stuff in there that's, it's like, hey, you know, while we disagree with many of the aspects of the report, we welcome the committee's recognition of OPM's swift response to the cybersecurity intrusions. And
okay, all right, yeah.
I can't even, like,
you can't get through it.
I can't even read this without without kind of cracking up. It's the same sort of politicizing and sort of, you know, dramatization of this stuff that kind of, you know, turns you off, turns me off, and I don't think really gets us anywhere. But, you know, I do hope. I mean, I'm rooting for Tuchel. I'm rooting for this guy to actually get some stuff done, because you got to think that this would not have happened if there was someone in place. And I think that's valid criticism of the current administration and the current Congress. Everyone collectively, Congress and the president, the Obama administration, knowing that these types of things have been happening now for a few years, and not sort of really putting their foot down and saying, okay, stop, this cannot go on. We've got to do something. Not a blank check, but like, we need to sit down, we need to get subject matter experts, we need to get people, vendors that know what they're doing in here to help us, we need to hire professionals that know what they're doing and patch these holes and at least make it harder. I mean, that's the thing that kills me. I mean, I'm a believer in American exceptionalism, Peter, and this is making us look really bad. This is making us look, and you know me, like I firmly believe whatever is being done to us right now by China and Russia, we have done to them many times over already. Right. I'm a firm believer in our cyber offensive capabilities are far ahead of what other nations, but our cyber defense right now stinks.
Defense is hard. Yeah. Well, one thing that occurs to me, I was talking to somebody recently about building codes. Building codes, every line in the building code, you know, like for example, that doors on public buildings have to open out. Okay. What I was told, or what I heard, is that every line in the building code represents somebody dying.
I mean, why am I laughing?
Why are you laughing? but no, it's, I mean, basically everything in the building, you know, all those little rules that you can't have the doors opening out on a public, opening in on a public building, or opening out on a residence, because you want the door to open in on a residence so that the emergency responders can get in more easily. But all of those things, everything to do with the electricity, with the wiring, the plumbing, everything, those all came about. They all were incorporated into the building code as a result of something horrible happening. Mm-hmm. And I think we're in the beginning of coming up with a cyber building code, so to speak.
That would be a good thing. So, I mean, I know like the last thing a lot of people want to hear when it comes to politics and government is more regulation, but I do think that we're in serious need of some just standards, codes, generally acceptable cybersecurity principles. GASP. Oh,
well, okay. I mean,
that's my new acronym. Generally accepted security principles.
Sure. Well, okay. Engineers, right?
You didn't like
if you're, I love that. Okay. Engineers, especially civil engineers, who are building things that hold people up from getting killed and prevent them from getting killed, like bridges and so on. They have to pass tests before they can call themselves an engineer. Software engineer is pretty much anybody who can, you know, write a Visual Basic program. In some parts of our history, that's all that you needed to be able to do. But I'm reminded, because I've known a couple of Canadians who are engineers, and they have a ring that's made out of the metal from a bridge that collapsed because the civil engineers didn't do it right. And that's to remind them every day that's what they're doing. What they're doing is preventing people from getting killed. And until the software engineering, there is no software engineering governing board.
No, there isn't.
But maybe we should have one, because people's lives are starting to depend on some of this stuff.
Yeah. Let's turn to our lightning round. Let's close it out. We've kind of gone on long enough, I think, about OPM. Peter, you have a few items you want me to time you on?
Well, I was going to give these to you.
Oh, you're going to give them to me?
Yeah,
oh,
I was gonna,
yeah, all right.
Because I want to get, because like I said, before, I was going to give you some conniptions.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So, oh, you're going to give me? I thought you were, okay.
No, yeah.
I got you.
This is for you to go.
All right, well,
go,
that's great.
Yeah. So the big one, Bruce Schneier.
Oh, yeah, this is great news. Okay, quickly, Bruce Schneier does a little piece on the Lawfare blog. I actually have it right in front of me.
Right, titled "Someone is Learning How to Take Down the Internet."
Yeah, so
30 seconds.
So he, Bruce Schneier, a renowned security expert, technologist, writer, author. Yeah, he's talked to several companies behind the scenes, unnamed. But they've all said kind of the same thing, that somebody is probing their defenses, possibly gearing up for a big attack to take down, literally take down the internet.
The entire internet.
The entire internet. That's great. That's fantastic. We don't know who it is. We don't know if it's China. We don't know if it's Russia. We don't know if it's us. It could be the NSA. It could be rogue NSA. It could be Skynet. It could be AI. HAL 9000. We don't know.
Ready for
all
the
right.
next
yeah,
one?
Yeah, I'm ready. Go.
Okay. AP staff publisher. Apparently, the FBI in 2007, under the posing as a journalist with the title of AP staff publisher. Yes. And apparently, so what happened was they posing as a journalist trying to get somebody who is sending threats. So, yes, we don't want these bad things to happen, but we also don't want the FBI to go around pretending that they're a journalist.
Somebody could be posing as you. Somebody could be posing as me.
Well, it just undermines the trust in the whole
awful
free and independent.
Awful. So, against that. Bad.
Okay.
Okay.
Next.
Stingray.
Stingray.
Oh, I love this story.
There's a... Did you hear about the leak?
Did I hear about the leak? I tweeted about it.
Oh, you tweeted
about
it.
I love
it. That's
probably
where I heard
about it. Yeah, this is welcome news. Welcome development. The Intercept got a hold of some documents from the company that makes the Stingray technology that intercepts cellular calls, cellular wireless signals, and is used by law enforcement to indiscriminately sweep up and spy on wireless phone communications. And the Intercept, somebody leaked the documents about how these things work to the Intercept. They published them. God bless. Good for them. Stingray, we need more disclosure and information on how these things work and what they're being used for.
And one of the things about the degree to which the government wants to keep these things secret is the FBI, when they go out and give training to the local police departments, they tell them, we don't want to get into court with this.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And in fact, one guy who was, facing some prosecution, he got his plea deal from 12 years in prison to 5 years in prison, because the alternative would have been they had to disclose the details of the Stingray.
Unbelievable.
So, and this is not an isolated occurrence.
They are so afraid of the company and law enforcement, the federal government, local law enforcement, doesn't matter, state law enforcement. They are so afraid of disclosing how these things work.
If you're
being used for.
If your local police department is using them, they may, in fact,
they're probably listening to us right now.
Well, let's not go there.
And we're not that important.
That's true.
Yeah.
But but they say they get the local police departments, if I remember correctly, to sign NDAs.
Yeah, you can't say under penalty of. Death?
Well,
no, probably not death. Okay,
being in trouble with the FBI is pretty bad.
Yeah.
All right. Next one. Okay. Is this one just popped up this morning, like an hour before we started?
Oh, great.
The Associated Press, Gannett.
Yeah.
Which owns U.S.
News. USA Today. Oh, the lawsuit.
Right. And
suing the FBI.
And Vice is suing the FBI for details of the exploit that was used to crack the San Bernardino shooter's phone.
Yes, yes.
So that's
bravo.
Breaking.
I want more information on this.
They want the how much they was paid.
Yep.
Who it was paid to.
How it worked.
And how it worked.
Where's the exploit now?
Right.
I mean, I know a lot of folks have hypothesized that it was a mobile security firm in Israel that...
I think that was debunked.
But that's been, you know, some people have shot that down. Who knows? But yeah. I mean, it could be because there have been similar things that have gone on with law enforcement, I guess, over there regarding cracking phone security, phone protection. So,
okay. Here's the last one.
Go.
FBI Director James Comey doubled down this week and said again that we should all be taping our webcams. Does that say something about Director Comey?
I don't know if Dell and Lenovo and Logitech and all the folks out there who run the webcam business are appreciating that, Director Comey. I mean, I don't have mine taped up right now. Hello, hackers. But I do. I mean, I don't use one. I mean, yeah. Am I paranoid? A little bit.
Yep.
A little bit. And Comey, he is, to bring it full circle, Peter, he has a right to be paranoid. Because guess what, Peter? He was part of the OPM breach. His FS-86 form is out there. People know who he is. I mean, people already know who he is. But now they have the details about him, his family, friends. Good for him. Be paranoid. There you have it.
Good enough for me.
Lightning round over.
That was great.
Wow. All right. Well, this was a long one, but I hope it was a good one. Thank you, Peter. Thank you as always for participating in this with me and providing some much needed sort of calming and you tempered my anxiety about the OPM report well, and I'm still gonna have a freak out about it, but that's okay. So yes, thank you, Peter.
It's always my pleasure to be here.
And of course, I'm Rob Wright with Search Security. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of the Risk and Repeat podcast, and we will see you next time.